All right, so this is what we call the afterburn. We are going to be talking about good news for a couple of weeks. So I hope you guys are okay and excited about that. All right? And look, for some of you that are watching for the first time, I want to just sort of throw this out there. I'm not here as a hireling to just fill a gap and do a teaching. I'm sharing with you essentially a master class. All right? That's not an ego thing to say, well, it's such a high-level class. I'm saying, it's in other words, we're going to go into as deep as we need to go into, and we're going to take as long as we need to take, and we're going to cover what needs to be covered. All right? So some of you look at my website, and you're all thinking, that thing has 50 parts. That thing has 60. Well, good. You should get excited about that. It means you're going to get a really thorough understanding. Okay? And none of it is fluff. It's not 60 parts because I had nothing else to do. It's 60 parts because I just got... didn't want it to make it 70. That's why it's 60 parts. Okay? If you understand what I'm saying, because it could have gone more. I try very hard to only repeat as much as is necessary to make sure the point is hammered properly without basically, you know, trotting on it to death, but to really make sure it's there. Because Yahweh says the same things also over and over and over and over again, right? And so hopefully that can be appreciated for people out there, because we're going to spend some time. And I think eventually I'm going to have to talk to Marty about this. I'm going to want to pull out two separate teachings out of this teaching. I want to take a separate teaching of just the armor out, and we can make that. So it'll also be in here in the full teaching. And I also want to take this separate part out on some of the aspects of the armor, like this thing about the good news. The good news may be a really cool separate teaching that we can just pull out in case somebody wants to understand what the good news is. They can just listen to that, okay? So I think these are like other teachings can come out of the same content. All right, so this is when we take comments, questions. You can share thoughts about today's teaching. So we'll begin with Shamash Steve. If you're online, you guys can start typing things in. And we got our Shamash team in the back that will take care of that.
All right, let's see if I can read this and make sense. You talked about a lot of different things in the past few weeks. So you got redemption, forgiveness, salvation, reward. Is it possible to have one and not obtain the other, or all of them intertwined, that if you get one or kind of obtain one, the other comes along with it, or does each require something of you?
Okay, give me the list that you started with.
Redemption, forgiveness, salvation, reward.
Okay, so these things are, and you don't have them necessarily in the right order, but I'm saying they're all part of a process, okay? So the process, let's see if I can make this simple. First thing is a bubble-popping awareness. You're not going to do anything unless you're aware that there's something to do. Something needs to change, something needs to be added to, right? You have to have an awareness. Okay, so once you have this awareness, then you have to do an assessment. Well, where am I now that I have this awareness? What is my relationship? What am I doing? Because you may find out that, you know what, I don't commit adultery. Okay, so I've got that one. I don't murder anybody. I don't steal. I mean, right, you're going to realize there's a bunch of things you already do. So you do a self-assessment. And then you realize, wait a minute, but I don't keep Sabbath, and I don't eat right, and I don't keep feasts. I'm doing this other stuff I need to stop doing. So you start doing the self-evaluation. And the things that you realize that you are doing that you shouldn't, that's where the repentance is. Okay, that's the step. And then the things that you haven't been doing that you should, that's where we now add into our walk the things that we haven't been doing. Okay, so redemption comes through this process where you're being redeemed out of that old life, the old man, the fleshly world, being now pulled into, and a door opened for you to be pulled into and drawn into the above mindset, even though we're still in the below. But you can live an above type life, a heavenly spiritual above life in the below fleshly earthly world, which is what he desires us to figure out how to do. Now, by figure it out, it's not like we have to figure out what to do. He tells us what to do. We just have to figure out how to do it in a fleshly place. In other words, how do I do this while my family's screaming at me and mad at me? How do I do this because, you know, my boss is going to fire me if I do that? You have to figure out how to do all that. And the answer to how is going to start with the fear of Yahweh and trusting him and knowing that he's holding your hand. Okay? Did that answer that mostly? Okay?
All right.
And then ultimately, if you do all that, it leads to the reward.
Okay, and then one more thing. When you first talked about putting on the armor, the first instruction was to stand. So I just wanted to make an observation or point out to everybody. You can't stand unless you have a spine.
That's true. Okay. All right, Craig.
So I want to thank you for this teaching on the gospel. The gospel is something that within the messianic body, so few people have a firm understanding and a grasp of what the true gospel was. I've seen, watching some YouTube channels and some other things and debates, and people, you could look really foolish really quick if somebody asks you what the gospel is and you can't answer it. Like, it's such a simple thing. It's all within the structure. I think Herbert Armstrong taught this gospel. He taught this, the true gospel, the only gospel, that the gospel that we hear about or that we might have known wasn't actually the God, but an anti. You probably go into maybe the anti-gospel, that there's a strong, there's a gospel teaching that actually does away with the coming kingdom. Their thought that the Son came to do away with the Torah is an anti-gospel. It's the message against the kingdom and not for the kingdom. And then as far as servants go, I've always thought about the servant in, I think it's Lucas 17:6 or so, where he talks about which one of you having a servant, lets the servant come in and eat and not serve the master before the servant gets to eat. That right. I think a lot of us within that role of the kingdom, within that role of the gospel, we're not necessarily going to be eating at the master's table. That there's going to be a structure involved in that.
Amen. Appreciate that. And by the way, the stuff you said initially, I'm going to cover quite a bit of those things when we do get back to. I started with Yeshua, right? Where I first mentioned it. Then we went to the Old Testament because I wanted you to see what the good news was being talked about and what people were expecting. Then we're going to go through all of the Gospels and into the writings and through Acts and stuff to see when they mention that they went from place to place sharing the good news of something. And often enough, it's of the kingdom and of the reign. Okay? And so you just have to, we'll have to play that through, and it will very much be what you're talking about. Okay? Because we do have a lot we're going to be covering here. After we finish with Isaiah, we're going to go through another prophet. Then we're going to go through Mark, Luke, Acts. Okay, we're going to go all the way to Revelation. I don't know how much you guys love that. I know some of you do. I like when I can take you through everywhere something is. Okay? And that's give you as much of a full understanding as I can give you. Okay? All right, Gerardo.
So I believe like last week or 2 weeks ago, you talked about something that we were the worst of the worst. Correction. I haven't gone back to actually follow up on the teaching, but I believe that you did say that.
That said what?
That we are, when we came out, we were the worst of the worst.
I don't remember.
Well, kind of in a sense, which kind of would touch reference on that we were nothing. We were broken. We were in need. In other words, like we
Well, that I'm sure I said something like that. But it depends on the context of what, I don't know. I don't know how to address it. I don't know the context.
It fits in here with what you were saying. So me and Jessica was talking about this in the morning, actually.
Well, hold on. You just gave me a thought.
Yes, sir.
So the idea that I said when people came out, they were like the worst of the worst, or they were not, you weren't any. How many of you were living a just wonderfully, just happy, perfect life before he called you? Nobody? Imagine that, okay? Rocky goes, imagine that. All right, so it's not like he disturbed your just happily perfect life that was going on and decided to tap you on the shoulder and wreck everything. Your life already was a train wreck, okay, in so many different ways. And he tapped you on the shoulder and said, there's a way to fix this, okay? And so that's, I think, part of that. But go ahead, Gerardo.
Me and Jessica was talking about this good news. I actually stated this morning that I know you clarified it, but I guess help me with my mumble from earlier. So I said that the good news was, I guess in a sense, the part of the gospel, because it's like when it came to the gospel, it's like he gave a full, the gospel, the Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, it, to me, it's more of, him walking it out, to display the actual hands of what he actually did. And this is just for my clarification, because in the other one, it was Moshe, it was Abraham, it was everyone else. But here, he lived amongst us. So was that the actual walk of it? And I guess that, because I believe earlier, I was believing that that was a good news, watching him walk it out, but you said it was the news of the redemption. How far off was I on that?
Well, look, part of the problem that we are running into, all of us in general, when we do these things, is language, right? Words and labeling things. Okay, when someone, that's why I don't use the word gospel, because gospel means so many things to so many people, almost always in a Christianized sort of way, right? So people say, well, in the Gospel of Matthew, that's not a right word to label what Matthew wrote. Neither is it a right word for Mark, Luke, or John. The better writing or understanding of it is like what it says in Revelation 12 when it says that these are those guarding the commands and possessing the witness or the testimony. This is the testimony from witnesses of the life of Yeshua. Okay? Now, all of that, learning about it, that's good news for us to know, but it's not the good news or the gospel. When people say, well, it's the gospel, they may use that as a word to say that it's the absolute truth. Well, it's the gospel truth. It's, look, that's not what the word means, okay? The good news, actually in the Hebrew, would have the idea, again, I told you this before, has the idea of being tidings or information or news of redemption, reward, and prosperity, okay? Now, that, you get some of that in all of the writings of the four writers of the testimonies of Yeshua's life. But in those four writings, there's so much more going on than just, except other than just, you know, tidings of redemption, reward, and prosperity. That's in there for sure. But it's telling you this: these are the things that Yeshua did and taught that led to eventually the redemptive act of the death, burial, and resurrection. But there was so much more going on. I mean, most of his ministry, like how long did it take for him to do the death, burial, and resurrection? 3 days, right? What was the rest of his life doing? He was teaching, instructing. You found him always somewhere teaching and instructing. And then a lot of that got written down for us so that we can be also instructed by him. And that's part of the witness and the testimony of his life. That's what those four writers give you, is their four accounts of his witness and his testimony. Okay, the accounts of what he did. Or even before he did, like the accounts of how he came even to existence, right? It starts with the birth, all the way till the death. And then even after that, to the resurrection, and still interacting with them afterwards. Okay, so that problem we have is language. So gospel is just another word that we really can't use because I call it Christianese and it no longer is functional because Christianity has turned it into something it's not. So now you have to use a different word. We'll call it good news. Call it testimony. You have to call it something else because to call it gospel confuses. It doesn't actually help. Okay? So that's why when you talk about the gospel, then I can't possibly be saying that's the same thing that Isaiah is talking about because Isaiah is not talking about Yeshua that way because the gospel is all about Yeshua and his living and walking and talking and dying and resurrecting and all that stuff. Well, no. That's the account about his life, the witnesses. He said, we are witnesses to those events. That's what the apostles would say. And we're here to witness to you that we walked and talked and lived with him. We know what he said and what he did. All right, Gerardo.
For 41:9, the standing up part, that means that you start going in the righteousness, walking in, and your feet stand firm. And it's not that you can't become a worm again, because you can definitely walk away from it, but it's best to grow a spine and not have one.
Yes.
Okay.
Look, it's not a physical malady, so to speak, so I don't want to use that as the metaphor that same way. It's like, for example, there's times when you are angry. There's times when you are stubborn. There's times when you are excited. There's times when you are happy. And then you can change and be something else again later. You can be a worm, and then you can stand, and you have to be aware if you're not on guard, you could become a worm again. Just like you can go from happy to angry if you're not watching yourself, Because you really have to understand that both of these things are simply choices. You can choose to be a worm or not. You can choose to be happy or not. You can choose to be angry or not. You can choose. These are all choices. I know they don't feel like choices all the time. Well, they made me angry. Nobody made you anything. They did something that your response was to choose to be angry. You could have chosen anything. You really could. It just doesn't feel like it at the moment. You've trained yourself to respond angry. You've trained yourself to respond whatever way you've trained yourself to respond, all right? And so the most powerful thing that's going to help you is to realize you have free will, which means you have freedom to choose your response to everything and anything freely. You can choose your response. You could choose to fear, you could choose to trust. You could choose to be happy, you could choose to be sad. You can choose to have joy, you can choose to be depressed. There are choices you can make. So you're like, oh no, you need help figuring that out, but you can't. What you have not done is activated enough personal internal power to make choice. Choice is a muscle. The ability to make choice is a muscle. Choice is an available thing. But I'm saying the ability for you to actually choose as a muscle you need to build and strengthen. Because that's where a lot of us fall apart and are weak, is that we don't know how to actually make choices. To actually choose the right thing to do and then go and do it. Because we're too busy responding reactively, like in a triggered way. In an auto response. That's an automated response. But you actually are a creature amongst all the creatures on the planet that has the type of mind that can make choices. You don't just have to respond. You can actually think it through and choose. Okay, Geronimo.
And two more things, Rabbi. I'm gonna make a comment and then I'm gonna give you a comment story. 41:18-20, to me, that relates to, in a sense, like coming out of a mixed multitude. For he created, and we can take it to Bereshit as well, where he created everything, this, that, and other, and dominion and all this other stuff. And then we come back and mixed multitude out of Israel, out of Mitzrayim, right? So here when it says 41:18-20, where it's pretty much like he's now saying again, look, I created all this. Rivers, hills, barefoot mountains, set apart wilderness, acacia, myrtle, oil trees, and stuff like that. I mean, he's given us other instructions, not to mix these, this, another, but I mean, the beauty of when you do look at nature, how many different trees that you have in this, another, how can God, in a sense, be racist? But two, and to me, hell is here. And I think that the emptiness that you was talking about would be worse, because at least the way I'm understanding this, you know, I wasn't really a Christian like that. Maybe I did been dead, but I weren't really a Christian. So from what they teach, it's more like you have hope because when you die, he is going to save you. But if you empty, there's no saving. There's no more coming back. You just dead. And I think that emptiness to me is a lot more fearful because I guess I know empty. You know what I mean?
Sure. Sure. Look, the only reason that somebody would choose death, even knowing that death is nothing, because some people say, well, I'm so miserable, I'd rather just have nothing. The only reason you'd want nothing is because you don't seem to have the ability. It's what you're thinking. It appears that you don't have the ability to envision better. That better is out there. That better is coming. Okay? Because now can be terribly miserable. Right now can be really painful, miserable, suffering, and whatever. So it may be a thought that comes, well, nothing is certainly better than all this pain and suffering. Well, yes, nothing is better than pain and suffering, but isn't something awesome better than pain and suffering? And he's telling you that if you can get through the pain and suffering, that something awesome is coming. That's the hope that we have that makes the pain and suffering worth going through. And so if you prefer, which is why people then, you know, commit suicide, and because they want to escape the pain instead of endure through to the joy. Enduring through earns a reward of the highest order, eternal life. Quitting gets you a reward of nothing. That's your reward, nothing. And so you need to think that through, thinking, do I, because you're thinking about escaping the pain. What about instead think about enduring for the joy and the pleasure and all the good stuff that will come if you could just hang in there, right? But what are you going to do? You're going to focus on whichever one's more real to you. The more real the pain is, the more you want to just escape the pain. The more real the future, the kingdom that's coming, the more this is nothing. That's what it says about Yeshua, right? He didn't think it was anything. So he went through the worst suffering that you can imagine, and yet his focus is on, but I'm going to be in the kingdom at the right hand with my Father when this is all over. Okay? And that's worth everything. There's no price high enough for that. But whichever's more real is what you're going to focus on, right? It has to be based on what's more real. Okay. Chris.
Okay, so I thank you for this teaching. I know you've touched on the gospel, the good news before, but this teaching was so much more in depth. I had a comment and a question. So the comment had to do with two different verses. First, in Isaiah 52, so in verse 7, and this was having to do with where the reason why you get the good news, like you mentioned the repentance, and so there's something physically you can do afterward once you receive it. And so in 52...
Don't go to 52. I'm doing
that. Oh, you're going
to
do that next week. Okay. How about Nahum 1?
I'm going to that next week.
Okay. Now, I'll skip to my question then in 2 Timothy. I thought you might mention those.
Yes.
He's mentioning a prophet and also Isaiah.
Those are my next two verses, 52 and Nahum 1. So we got those on my list right here.
Okay. In 2 Timothy 4, verse 5, Paul is talking to Timothy. And I know you've defined evangelist as a person who promotes the person who's being the person with the good news. Now it says, but you be sober in all matters, suffer hardships, do the work of an evangelist, accomplish your service completely. So in this case, is Timothy being the evangelist and being the...
Okay, remember, evangelists, I didn't say the evangelists, that's all they do is promote somebody else. Evangelists are the ones who are promoting, period, okay? So, you know, if you get excited about this teaching and then start posting it on your Facebook page and sharing with people, that's an evangelist action, okay? You're not the one that actually created the information, but you're excited about it and you're trying to share it with others, okay? But what I said was the evangelist is not the guy showing up to the big tent meeting. That's what a lot of times the Christians will call them. It's the guys who are promoting people to come and hear him. Okay, so it's not just promoting a person. It's the ones who are the ones out there. I didn't create the material. I'm excited about it. I want the ones who are saying, hey, you got to read this. You got to hear this. You're an evangelist for a product. If you happen to go and you buy a product and you love it, you start telling all your friends about it. That's an evangelist sort of behavior. When it's in the terms of the things vertical, we actually that's why we call it an evangelist. Otherwise, we would call you a marketer or a promoter. Okay? But when you're marketing and promoting it, what you're excited about vertically, that's an evangelist role. Okay?
Okay, so you're saying in 2 Timothy that Timothy would be the one promoting as well as teaching?
Okay, all of those, to whatever degree, that are in a teaching role have an evangelist aspect to them because I'm promoting you to get excited about Yeshua, the Torah, this book, everything. Okay, there's an aspect of me trying to get you excited about these things vertical. And so Timothy has that role. Timothy also has a role to promote Paul, okay, as his teacher. Okay? And then, so there, again, the four, Ephesians 4, the five sort of roles there that we talked about, right? The fivefold. You're not looking for one person in each role necessarily, okay? People tend to wear more than one hat, okay? So when you hear me doing this smacking, then I'm more in that prophet role. When I'm explaining to you the mechanics of how certain things are done and when to do them and how, then I'm wearing the teacher hat more, okay? When I'm counseling you, I'm probably doing more the shepherding hat. You see what I'm saying? Okay? If I'm trying to get you excited to get in there and do, you know, I'm pointing you vertically, that's more the evangelical hat.
I love how Yahweh can have all those in one person. And so you don't need to go to all these different sources for information, but one spiritual destination.
Right. Well, look, I mean, if you have a big enough ministry, you'll find that it's kind of like we do with the color code. You're going to find there are some people that are more red, some are more blue, some are more white, some are more yellow, right? And you have enough people, you're going to find there are people that are strong in any one of those four colors. Well, guess what? You have a big enough ministry with enough anointed people in it, you're going to find there's those that are much more proficient and effective in one of those fivefold than they are in the other ones, even though they can do all of them maybe, or several of them maybe. The thing is, what is their strongest one? And so that's, look, I think one of the reasons why he's helped me to be proficient in all of the five roles is because I've been basically doing this myself for a long time. So I had no choice but to wear all the hats. But I think that when he provides me with enough other people that are there as wingmen, so to speak, those Joshuas, then I will probably spend most of my time in the prophet role trying to get those of you that already know what you're supposed to do to get you to do it, okay? Because that's really, I think, my major calling is to get you motivated to do. That's what a prophet does. A prophet is not just speaking about the future or anything else. To get you to do what you're supposed to do. That you already know what to do, right? The teacher's going to teach you what to do. The prophet's going to try to say, okay, now that you know what about it, let's do it, all right? Let's get on with it. Let's get to it. But I have to teach you. I have to be the prophet. I have to shepherd you. Okay, I'm going on a trip, and as I go on these trips, I'm going to help plant congregations. So I have to do the apostle role, which I may do more when I don't have to do the teaching and other roles, because I'll have other people to do these things. Okay, and so it's not that the fivefold means you have to find five people. What you need is the roles. You need to have a teacher. That teacher almost these days tends to be someone who's also a prophet. In other words, he's going to teach you what to do and he's going to kind of motivate you to actually do it. Okay, so it's like a teacher prophet. You're going to need someone to shepherd you. That's someone who's actually going to care about you and love on you and those kind of things, which, you know, we have people that do very well with that. Rabbi Tom contacts people when they don't show up and just wants to make sure they're okay. That's a shepherding role, all right? You know, elder goes around and makes sure he gives everybody a squeeze because that's a shepherding role to make people know they're loved. I'm not so good at that. I walk right past you 100 times and not even say hi. And it's nothing personal. I'm already busy, focused on whatever I'm targeted to run and do, okay? But if I slow down and you need me, I can come around and look, I come and stay in the room now for the hug time. All right, and I go around and give some people some hugs because I recognize that's a shepherding role that needs to be done, okay? Anyway, Shira.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you so much. I am just really on fire with this whole thing. And I want to ask you, if I look at Psalm 48 for a second, would that be stealing any thunder from future?
Not in my notes at the moment, but I only have 2 pages of my 8 pages of notes. So I don't know if I went there, but go ahead. Psalm 48.
Okay. In Psalm 48, the reason I was studying this psalm this morning and actually looking at also in the art scroll Tanakh, which has a beautiful translation of it. But I want to talk about the power of visualization. Visualization, as you were answering Gerardo, you know, the choice, the power of choice. And you've been really good at giving us the stick, which is a good motivator. But I'm not sure if how aware you are of how powerfully your ministry has operated in my life to make the carrot real.
Good.
And
good.
And it really, you've really made the carrot real. Let's give him a hand. I mean, you're describing for us things that are really difficult to get a hold of, and I'm trying because I found that in the Word, you know, just looking at it and meditating on it, more and more being able to visualize the reward ahead. And that is a great motivator for me. And so Psalm 48, a lot of us are familiar with it. Great is Yahweh, greatly to be praised, in a set apart mountain, beautiful on high, the joy of all the earth, and describing Zion. And he goes down and he gets to the end of the chapter. And I find this whole chapter is a lot about visualizing the reward. He says, walk about Zion, go all around her, count her towers, like see what this is all about, this amazing kingdom. Set your heart upon her rampart. And that really struck me today. Do I set my heart on the high places? What you were describing, is it really in my heart? And then it says, go through her citadels. And in the Tanakh, the translation is build up her towers. And I just thought that was so amazing. So you report it to the coming generation. So you've got this vision here of this wonderful kingdom that's drawing us. But then he really makes the point for me that is the big thing. For this Elohim is our Elohim forever and ever. He himself leads us even to death. And for me, it's like the whole thing comes around. When I have trouble visualizing the greatness of what I'm after, it just seems so unreal and so amazing. For me, it's that well done. It's that this whole thing is all wrapped up in the person who created me, and he is so awesome and so amazing and such a giver, and has done everything to make it possible for me to live with him forever. And so when I have trouble visualizing the reward, I close my eyes and I picture standing before this brilliant, beautiful Master Yeshua, and hearing him say, well done, because it's Elohim that I'm after.
Amen. Amen. No, you go back. All right.
So much came in my mind in this teaching. I was able to connect it to other teachings. You were talking about dangling the carrot, and a big motivator is death for people. Not so much for me, because I've cheated so many times, I can't even count. And there was a few times, not now, but there was a few times in the past where that's the way I was wanting to go. And I was thinking about, well, what's my motivator? And I'm like, the one thing I always want, and I don't mean you when I say dad on this one. I said, I always wanted my dad, Paul, to love me. I wanted my dad to be there. And, you know, through you, I get that little bit of a light to go, that's how the Father is going to be. That's the shiny little moment of how the Father is going to be. And I want to be able to hear him say, after all the trials you were put through, you beat it one after the other, after the other, after the other. And I just want to say, you earned this spot. And that's why I say, how bad you want it, because it's a game, it's a challenge, it's a win for me. And when I hear, good job, trustworthy servant, you know, it'd be wonderful to know I didn't stop when I had the choice at every given moment to go ahead and do so. And by people on this planet, I would have been justified so. But I'm not looking for the people on this planet. I'm looking for him, and I'm looking through leadership to give me that push, give me that smack, give me everything I need to get there. And I just wanted to say thank you for that. And I connect it to a couple of the teachings, the dangling and the carrot, and my motivator. When Elder did his teaching for John 15:5, he who stays in me and I am him, he bears much fruit, because without me you are able to do naught. And it was making me think, he wants us to join him. We're supposed to be a part of him. We're an image of him. So, you know, maybe like something, and I take it physically, like, well, maybe we look like him, so we need to join back to his body. And, you know, and then I went to your evil teaching part 3, chapter 2 Kings, or I'm sorry, yeah, 2 Kings 17, verse 11. And they did evil matters to provoke Yahweh. Do not do this. To me, provoking Yahweh is for him to give me all those trials, because he knew I could do it. And it's not really proving to him, it's proving to myself and proving to everyone else that I was worthy of those trials, and that I was setting an example of, I can do it, anyone can do it. And there's, it's just, I just want to say thank you for your teachings.
Amen. You're very welcome. All right. I have a thought come to me with John 15:5 that you mentioned. He says, I am the vine, you are the branches. He who stays in me and I in him, he bears much fruit, because without me you're able to do nothing. Okay. On the simplest surface value, is that actually true? Not unless you have more information, because don't you do lots of things without him? So it's not that you can't do anything without him. So he must be talking about something specific. Okay? Remember, he says, if you stay in me, you're going to bear much fruit. So that's the thing he says you can't do without him. Okay? Because without me, it says you're able to do nothing. Well, that's not true. You're not able to do this. So this is the nothing. All right? Right? Because you can do all kinds of things. You can sin. You can do nothing. You can whatever. But we're talking about the bearing of fruit. That's where this gets into, what is it that because of him we're able to do? Knowing he exists, you're still able to do anything you did before you knew he existed. So what are you now able to do because you know he exists? Well, if you know he exists, you know he's the truth, you know he's the light, you know he's the Torah. Now you're able to keep the commandments. Now you're able to do what's pleasing in his sight. Now it changes everything. So when he says here, because without me, you're able to do nothing in the bearing of fruit. Okay? Not that you're not able to do anything. You can do it. You were doing everything before you knew he existed. Whatever you were doing. So you got to go in deeper into these questions and go, okay, well, he says without me, you're able to do nothing. What's the nothing he's talking about? The things that are pleasing in my sight, you're not able to do without me. The things that get you the well done, good and trustworthy servant, you can't do those without me. That's what he's talking about. Does it make more sense? Is that good? All right. Grayson, and then we got to go to the live stream.
So I have a question of chapter 40, verse 17. If that is how he views the, well, Isaiah chapter 40, verse 17 from today's teaching. So if that's how he views the nations, and I know that I was formerly in the nations, why, if I was viewed as a non-entity and less than a speck in emptiness, does he choose anybody out of that and give them the opportunity to become Israel?
Okay, remember, what he's referring to the nations here as them as an entity, not the people in it. So don't look to that nation as power, as authority, as deliverer. This is the same problem you had with Jeremiah, where they were looking towards Egypt to deliver them, or they're looking towards someplace else to deliver them, right? As opposed to looking to him. He says, don't look to Rome. Don't look to Babylon. Don't look to any of these other places. Don't look to Egypt. They're nothing. The authority of the strength and all the other things that have to do with that nation are nothing. So it's not about the people in it. He's saying the nation that you looked to as being so impressed with it and so powerful, like Rome, right? Ruled the world, so to speak. Or, you know, when the British had their thing or whatever group has their thing. Don't look to a nation. Or back in Israel's day, everybody was impressed with Egypt. They were impressed with Babylon. They were impressed with Assyria. Whatever they were impressed with, he says, don't be impressed with nations. Nations are nothing. I can destroy a nation anytime I want to destroy a nation. So it's not about the people in it. He's talking to the entity, the corporate entity of called the nation. All right, live stream. Shamash Rob.
Okay, Daphne Neighbors, Isaiah 40. Is Jerusalem a metaphor for all the people of Israel for all generations? And Isaiah 41:2 is the quote-unquote righteous one of the East, Abraham.
Okay, the first question I would say yes. Okay, Jerusalem is probably being used here as a metaphor for the people of Israel. Okay, when it says, comfort, comfort my people, says Elohim, speak to the heart of Jerusalem and cry out to her. Okay, so he's trying to reach into that. So I think that metaphor plays out. 41:2, let's see, raised up the righteous one from the east, called him to his foot, gave the nations before him and made sovereign submit to him. He gave them as dust to the sword, as driven stubble to his bow. I don't know that it is very clear, you know, who that's referring to there. But he does talk later about Israel as a servant and also Abram as his friend. So I wouldn't feel comfortable to actually put a name on that. Okay. Next.
Okay. Do have 1 Peter 1 in your upcoming notes. Somebody's asking a question about that. But if you want me to skip it.
I don't have notes that go far enough to that, so I might.
Okay. Pete and Brenda, can you understand 1 Peter 1:22-25 to mean that the good news includes that because Yeshua lives forever, that the Torah also lives forever, and by following both, we have the chance of eternal life?
Okay. Any verse that has the actual phrase good news in it, I will probably cover. Like Psalm 48, or whatever it is that Shira went to, didn't actually have that phrase in it, okay? So those are safer. So I will cover 1 Peter when we get there, because that's in verse 25, so I probably will carry that out. I'm trying to cover all the verses, at least as, like sometimes I had to read you 40 verses, only one of them covered it, but I was, because that section covers, and then I maybe go further like I did reading additional chapters, but it's based on that one place where it's talking about the good news. Okay, so if anybody asked a question about verses I didn't cover yet that have the word good news in it, wait till I finish, I might cover it. I probably will cover it, okay?
From First Love, do you or are you have a process / next step chart, maybe a checklist of the walking process?
Have a process, next step chart. Look, the process is already charted for you. Where is it charted for you? Deuteronomy 10:12. There's your process. Fear him, walk in all his ways, love him, serve him. Okay? It's the process is right there. All right. And guard the commands, obviously, overrides all that. But Deuteronomy 10:12 explains all that right there. That's your process.
All right. M2Y, Odessa, Texas, is the prison darkness in Isaiah 42:7, the same prison and darkness spoken of in 1 Peter 3:19.
Yeah, probably, because it says that in which he also went and proclaimed unto spirits in prison who were disobedient at one time when the patience of Elohim waited in the days of Noah. You know what? I don't know exactly what Peter's talking about here, because we have to be careful that it's not like Yeshua went to hell and talked to people that it's, or dead people, or where it's not, that doesn't play out right, okay? So let's be careful with 1 Peter 3, but we are talking in general that those in prison are almost always referring to those that have been scattered and are in the punishment of Deuteronomy 28 and in the curses, okay? All right, next. I like seeing it says M2I Odessa on there. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Our newest congregation.
Okay, this is the last one I have, Rabbi. Greg Wallen, Isaiah 41:9, because of how powerful rejection is, if someone, quote unquote, feels rejected, what is it that they're not seeing? How does the feeling blind the seeing?
Okay, so this is the typical counseling type stuff that we end up dealing with. If someone feels rejected, what is it that they're not seeing? Okay, almost always we have a reality problem. In other words, they're filtering the actual facts of what's going on and interpreting it to the idea of being rejected. And by the way, sometimes you're rejected. Hold on. How do you know the difference? First of all, you bring reality and you can find out the difference, because you can decide if you're feeling rejected or if actually you were rejected. But the second thing is, it shouldn't matter, because it's how you're dealing with the reality that you may have been rejected that's the problem. You are feeling pain out of rejection. I may feel justified out of rejection. People that are sinners, that are doing wrong things, are rejecting me because I'm doing right things. I might feel pretty good about that. So you can't just take rejection as a negative emotional thing, okay? Because Yeshua says they're going to reject you like they rejected him. So don't be surprised that people in your life have rejected you. Some of them rejected you because of things you did, and you deserved it. So it's about, again, I need to talk to someone more about their specifics so I can help them see, by asking a lot of questions, what really is happening, and is the feeling of rejection appropriate in that situation? And then even if it is that a bad thing in itself anyway? Okay? What happens is, if you have an overly abundant need to be accepted, if you have an overly abundant need to be a pleaser, to have people look at you and they're pleased with you, any kind of negative response, anything that feels like rejection, is going to hurt. And you're not going to be able to see it as okay or even necessary. Sometimes it's necessary. You're going to have to reject some people too. And so it's the way you're perceiving and responding to that reality. So first of all, it may not even be that you're being rejected, but even if you are, that doesn't necessarily then justify the hurt feelings and upset and turmoil. That then the next question was, well, how does that feeling blind your seeing? Well, anytime you're in a negative emotional place, you are, even a positive emotional place, if you're in a strong emotional place, you're not seeing straight. You're seeing through a filter that's going to make it hard for you to see things correctly. Even if it's a positive emotion, you're not going to see things right. So you have to be careful when the emotion is very strong, how you respond to things, because you may not be seeing them exactly as they are. You may be filtering it through, which makes them either look bigger or smaller than they are. Okay? You know, you're in a super excited and happy emotion. You may be taking something and thinking it's much bigger than it may be really much smaller. All right? That person that's just I'm just so in lust with you. I have all these emotions. I desire you so much. And the person that I'm thinking that way kind of looks over in my direction, really is looking at the person behind me. I think they're looking at me. I take that little thing and turn it into, oh, she likes me. Because my emotion created that whole mess. Okay? Also, if you're in a really negative space, somebody could do a little thing that might in itself be irritating on some level, but you take it into this huge thing because you're already in a negative place. So now you've taken a little thing and made it big. Okay? And so this is where, you know, you're going to get out of whack. By the way, if you're in an over-the-top sort of manic sort of place, something actually terrible could be happening and it is big and you're just ignoring it because you're in this manic place. So it could also be that a big thing's happening and you're ignoring it like it's a little thing. All when our emotions are out of control, okay? All right, next. So the bottom line for that last one was counsel specific. That needs more specific to answer those questions. Okay, next.
Courtney just asked, is there a good way to tell if we're on the right track, doing what we need to do? I think you answered that a minute ago.
Is there a good way to tell if we're on the right track doing what we need to do? Well, look, you know, I think one of the measuring sticks is learning the skill, and I guess this is a skill, of self-evaluation and self-assessment in an honest, not emotionally brutal way. Some of you are brutal on yourselves. I'm no good. I'm just terrible. And you only see everything you do is bad. And some of you have an overly flowery, rosy view of yourself, and you never see anything that you do is bad. So you have to learn the skill of honest self-evaluation, self-assessment. If you're not very good at that, then you need to find a good person friend, like someone who you respect, that can then give you feedback that you're willing to hear, okay? Someone who you can not just value them because of your friendship, but you know they're going to tell you the truth and not just say things nice just because you're their friend. Okay? So you want to know that you're going to get the honest truth out of that. All right? I was not even that close a friend. Years and years ago, I was working in a gym, and one of the ladies that worked there was an aerobics supervisor. And I knew she had been working on her weight. She had a weight issue. And I noticed that she started gaining a little back. And I went up to her to talk to her about it, and she thanked me and said I was her only friend that actually noticed and had the strength to say something. Not something mean, not something critical, just saying, is there something going on? I know you've been working on this, and I noticed you're going back that direction. I didn't, you know, just, is there anything I can do? Or I just want to encourage you because you were doing great, okay? And she actually said that none of her friends said anything. From a friend point of view, I wasn't even that close. We just happened to work together in the same building, you know, so we're coworkers. But see, a friend could come up to you in a non-aggressive, non-critical way and share with you, especially if you ask them to, but share with you honestly, okay? And not say things to please you. Because they'll know what you really want to please you is to hear the truth. That's a good friend, but are you willing to have the, can you receive it, in other words? Are you willing to receive when they're honest with you? Okay? And they tell you the truth. And then the last answer to how this can be done is the vertical. You have someone that you counsel with in the vertical, and they can help you with your assessing yourself and what you're doing, especially if they get to know you and watch you. They could also notice if you're doing well or not and give you some sense. Okay, but really, you have to own your own responsibility of self-assessment. We have lots of verses that talk about examining yourself. Well, that's only going to work if you are able to examine yourself in an honest way. Okay, and be able to receive all that. All right, that's going to, looks like it's going to cover it for all the questions. Appreciate everybody today.